Hello, I'm Will Shires, and this is Talking Trucks. This week I'm going to be chatting with the owner of Asheville Aggregates and YouTube sensation, Daniel Luisi. Unfortunately, all of his trucks were out working during our visit, so instead of being recorded in a cab, this interview took place in his office. You might be able to hear the photographer in the background who was taking pictures for a future issue of Commercial Motor magazine. If you're enjoying the podcast and want to stay abreast of everything that's going on in this industry, then why not subscribe to Commercial Motor magazine weekly? For great deals, head over to www.com-mot.com. That's www.com-mot.com. Daniel, thank you very much for joining me on this episode of Talking Trucks. The podcast is getting more popular all the time, but I've got a long way to go to match your YouTube weekly bulletins. How many subscribers do you now have? How many views have you had?
Okay. Firstly, thank you for having me, and let me give you some of those analytics now. I do like to look at this myself every now and then. Okay, so over the lifetime of the channel, we started in probably 2020.
Okay.
We have had 65 million views, and currently our subscriber base is 445,000.
Wow. So why is it so popular?
That's
at the end of the day, it's just tippers.
It is, it's tippers and some skips and some volumetrics and a couple of trains. I think that because I share the challenges I face on a daily basis, a lot of what's going on at the moment, what people are putting out there is very polished, telling them the great side of things and everybody's so great and everything's going so well. I share the challenges, the struggles I have, and I share how I overcome them. And I think people find value in that. And apparently, I can be funny sometimes. I don't see it myself. I'm not trying to be funny, but apparently I'm funny sometimes.
Yeah, no, I'd say it's a very entertaining watch for someone.
We have a weekly vlog which goes out. We are at episode 136, I believe, this week. So that every Sunday for 136 weeks, we put out a weekly vlog, and then we have standalone videos as well. So special projects we're working on. We filmed a couple the other day up in Scotland at Glensander. Got a couple great videos coming. A journey of a rock, how a rock came off the side of a mountain and managed to find its way through three various forms of transport to a UK infrastructure project from all the way to Scotland.
Idea.
Yeah, we've got done some showcases of some very large ships and history and the history of a quarry. So we have some very exciting videos coming as well, alongside the weekly vlogs.
So what do you actually get out of it, though? Because at the end of the day, those millions of people aren't going to be asking for a tipper load of muck moved, are they?
No, they're not. And if they did, I think life would be a lot better around here. but they're not. It's more globally putting the brand out there so people know who Asheville are. It becomes a point that if you remember the Eddie Stobart effect, everybody knew what an Eddie Stobart lorry was, but how many of them were going to actually use Eddie Stobart for anything?
Yeah.
There are other avenues we're looking at, like Asheville merchandise and toy trucks, and so it's a much more global idea than people using us for muck away or for a load of sand.
Okay, that makes sense. And does it help with recruitment? Because obviously there's a massive driver shortage at the moment.
You know, it actually makes recruitment more challenging.
Okay.
Because we get so many applicants and people are very enthusiastic to work at Asheville. However, sure. They're so enthusiastic that they're not reading the application properly. So it will say minimum of 2 years experience and there'll be parameters. But everybody completely ignores the parameters on any job ads we put out, and we get a massive influx. And then we need to spend the time to go through each of these one by one. So it can be employment is more of a challenge than it was previously.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I wouldn't have expected that. Someone I've got to ask, when do you read the comments on your videos?
I do read some of them, but I try to when you're putting out videos every week, you have to do your best not to get emotional about the comments.
Yeah.
Because the comments can make or break your day. And what I try to think to myself, if one person made a comment, it's probably 100 people thinking the same thing. So I try to take a broad view and a pinch of salt.
Yeah.
If everybody's saying, look, you're the greatest, it doesn't mean you're the greatest. And if everybody says you're rubbish and you don't know what you're doing, there may be a little bit of truth in that. But it's not entirely true as well. So, but we do try and pay attention to the comments. More the team than I do.
Yeah.
More the team than I do, because I struggle to find the time to go through them one by one.
So what does the team consist of? You got a full-time videographer?
Yeah, we got three full-time videographers constantly filming and editing. We have a room downstairs, which I can show you afterwards. We have about £200,000 worth of camera equipment. We have drones. We have cameras. We have top-of-the-range computers. We have software. We have time-lapse cameras. We have all the charging and the charging stations and clamps and everything you can imagine. If the team say we need it, or if we buy this camera, we can get this shot, we've got it. And we've even got the travel cases, because we've been traveling a little bit lately. So we've got the official solid foam pack travel cases, what make us look really professional when we get on a plane.
So it's with you, it's mainly YouTube, isn't it? Do you have any other social media? You're on Instagram as well.
Yeah, Instagram, and I have my first TV appearance coming out soon. Other than the news, because I've been on BBC News quite a lot lately. I've been the BBC News asked me to speak on the construction industry, and they love to pop down their yard because it's just, as they say, it's general industry. I have a TV show coming out in September, season one. It's on I can't say too much, but it is on a global network, and it is around engineering. So I've flown around the world and I filmed season one. And it's going to be on a global network. It's going to be out all over the world. And it's going to be in September. And I'm doing I'm back behind the camera doing photo shoots. So I have to do a couple of photo shoots with them next week as they prepare for their big media push. And in my sit-down talks with them, they have said this show is a priority.
Fantastic.
So please look out for it.
Okay.
It'll be on a global network.
All right, now, before we sort of find out what's happened since I've been here last, which was, I think it was sort of November 2020.
Yes.
Can you just recap, just in case, just by some pure miracle, there's people out there who don't actually know your background. Can you tell us how you got into this? Because unlike most of the operators I go and visit, you're not second or third generation. And I'm pretty sure you weren't born with a silver spoon in your mouth.
I wasn't.
So, how did you get to where you are now, running this massive operation?
Okay, well, taking it all the way back to the start, I'm a West London boy, born and raised in London, from a council estate, single-parent family. I went to school in and around London. I went to college, and I went to university to do sports science, and then worked out it wasn't really for me. Left uni and was doing strength and conditioning training with professional cricket players. For my sins, I did a little bit of modelling. The old, there used to be an old bit of an 8-pack here a very long time ago. And in around 2004, when it was a lot easier to lend money, I moved from West London to East London and bought a property. Because at that time you could get money to lend if you had like a 10% deposit.
Yeah.
And I bought a property for 170 grand in East London because I believe the hype that if I bought in East London, I would be a multi-millionaire when the Olympics came. More for me.
With you.
And I actually used subcontractors and lived in the house while I tried to refurbish the house and do a loft conversion and redecorate it, new bathrooms, new kit. And I worked in the house myself with the subcontractors. And I remortgaged that house. I bought a flat round the corner in Silvertown. I did the same again. And in 2006, I started our construction company, with a bunch of stock images from websites that was no work I'd done. But sometimes you've got to fake it till you make it, right?
Yeah.
So from 2006, we were just a construction business. As our construction business grew over the year, our revenue grew, the size of the projects we were doing grew, and then we began to do basements in Southwest London. Just people with existing properties refurbishing the entire home and then digging basements. Okay. But what I realized at that point is that I was struggling for service. We had 10 people in a basement digging, and we had a conveyor belt and a skip outside, and if they don't turn up and take the muck, then I'm paying everyone to stand around and we can't work.
Yeah.
So one day on a whim in 2013, I thought, I'm not having this. I went and bought a grab lorry myself, which I drove myself. I did the muck away myself. And I found out at a point where to take the muck. And when I had found out where to take the muck, because nobody would tell me where to take it, I realized that when I got there, they had sand as well. Hold on a minute here. I'm missing a trick. Right. So then I began to provide aggregates and waste management services to my construction business. But sod's law, after a while, I bought this lorry, had to keep it busy. We didn't get any basement digs for 2 years.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so all the people, but you have to adapt. So all the people that I used to tender against, I went to them and I said, look, I can't beat them on price, you know, but I'll be there when I say I will. And then I had one grab lorry, two grab lorries, three grab lorries, four. And then there's a bit of a change in Wandsworth, where they banned grab lorries from grabbing out of skips. So it meant that all the work in Wandsworth, you had to have 8-yard skips full of muck, and you had to change the skip 4 or 5 times a day. Now I began to lose a lot of money because I don't have skip lorries, and the people who were doing the skips, they then began to say, hey, I've got aggregates and I've got grabs, so I'm not having that. So I went and bought a skip lorry. So then we were doing skips and grabs, and with all the earth that we've got, I thought, well, we need a couple of tippers. You know, so it was grabs, tippers and skips, went up to a fleet of about 12, worked for a few years in that way. And then what kept happening is we kept going to sites and they kept saying, you have to wait, the concrete lorry's not here. We're waiting for the concrete lorry. You have to leave, the concrete lorry's not here. So I thought, no, I'm not having that. So I went and bought a concrete lorry.
I can see where this is going, yeah.
Yeah, so, and then we started doing concrete. So we're doing concrete alongside doing the grabs, skips, and tippers. Concrete got busy because we didn't start concrete from nothing, because everybody who's using us for the other services, they're also using us for concrete. So we went one concrete lorry, two concrete lorries, three concrete lorries. So we have three concrete lorries, but then what's happened? Every time these concrete lorries are turning up, they're saying, well, you have to wait for the pump. We're waiting for the pump. So I thought, I'm not having that, so I went and bought a pump. So now we're running a concrete pump, but we had a bit of a change in that the emissions kicked in. So I used to run, the lorries I was buying were dictated by the resources I had. So I used to buy older lorries and we used to fix them. It's a bit of heartache, fixing the lorries, keeping on top of it, but you don't have the huge outgoings you have on a monthly basis. However, when Euro 6 kicked in, we had to make a serious change, and that's when we began to start buying newer lorries. And when I began to start buying newer lorries, I began to buy tippers. I realized that I was going after all this build work and just using grab lorries, whereas there's a whole nother market of ground workers and large scale muck shifting that the tippers need to do. And tippers which can shift 6, 7, 8 loads a day, I found them more profitable than grabs, and I found grabs to be very difficult because they're running around in central London, they're squashed on a road trying to grab out of a skip while the neighbors are out the window filming you. It's a challenge with grabs.
Yeah.
However, with tippers, you can do massive bulk shifts, you can be outside the job, 8 o'clock in the morning, 10, 15 lorries go in there, by 12 o'clock you've got 50 loads out, you go into another job, and you can run them both ways. That's what I found. So we began to buy more and more tippers, and then in around 2017-18, we began to have supply issues where we couldn't get material. We grabbed the attention of a few larger companies, will I say, and they began to, reserve the right to supply us with material.
With you?
Yes. So I thought, well, I'm not having this. So I worked on it for about 2 years, and then we managed to open a railhead in 2019. So the railhead is where we decided that we can bring material from other parts of the country, because people in the other parts of the country don't really mind what's going on here. They want to sell their material.
Yeah.
That's when we opened a railhead. But then I opened a railhead and didn't have enough lorries. So now I need to go and buy a whole bunch of new lorries. So then we began to up the fleet with tippers. And then with the space we've got in this yard and everything we're doing, we decided that we would try to diversify with our existing skill set. So we went into bagging as well. So now we bag material. Our volumetric fleet has increased to 5 lorries. We're looking for a 6th one. We're looking to go down the route of a batching plant.
Okay.
We have 15 tippers on the road now. It's a very diverse fleet. And that is, believe it or not, that's the short version of how we've come to this point.
Yeah.
That's the short version of it.
So many trains are coming in every week?
We really, not enough. We can take 2 trains a day, 6 days a week, but at the moment we're at about 3 trains.
Okay.
Because we're, trains sometimes make it difficult because of the cost of rail freight. And if they're, and if you have people locally who can supply at a certain level, it makes it difficult with rail sometimes.
Yeah.
Until, of course, there is no material in the area. And when there is no material in the area, then you become everyone's best friend until the quarries kick off again and the quarries are working.
Right. So that first truck you purchased,
yes,
and drove yourself.
Yes.
I think I'm right in saying you didn't even have a license at first, did you? So you had to quickly learn how to drive before you could even operate it.
Yes, I didn't know how to drive it, but you know, if I need to read the instructions, it means I don't know how to use it, doesn't it? The first truck I got, they dropped it off to me, and they used to park up at a yard in Cricklewood. And I remember I jumped into the lorry and I turned the key, and I didn't even know that when the air is down, there's a red warning that says stop. So I've got in, turned the key. I thought I broke it. I turned it off and pulled the key out and ran off. And then I went and spoke to my fitter, who's still with me now. And I said, I think I broke it. He said, what do you mean you think you broke it? I said, it's saying stop and it's red. And he was like, well, what have you done? And we've gone to it. And it's because the air was down.
Yeah.
So because I bought older lorries in the beginning, I've learned so much about the repair. I could tell you a lorry from front to back, the axles, I could name all the parts because I spent so much time with my fitter under lorries. But when you have a very small fleet, you can't afford for any lorry to be off the road, but you really can't afford to have a lorry off the road. And there were many a night when we stayed in the yard overnight with the LED light on the head, looking like a miner underneath the lorry, trying to fix them.
Yeah.
So yeah, I didn't know how to drive them and I didn't know how they worked, but I did have to learn. And in learning, I think a couple of gearboxes got the old crunch on me, but you know, I learned the hard way. So yeah, if I broke it, I had to pay to fix it,
yeah,
which is why I was so precious about them. But I wouldn't, they were, my first lorries were manuals. I would never buy a manual lorry ever again.
Okay. That was the first one. It was a DAF CF, was it?
It was a DAF CF 85 grab with an Epsilon 120 crane on it.
Okay.
Yeah. And because I was driving it around all day, it even had, I put, this to show you how wet behind the ears I was, I put a load of speakers in it to listen to music. But then I got in it and drove it and think, well, I can't hear what's going on outside. It's dangerous. So I just turned it all off. So it didn't serve me spending all the money on the speakers and the sound system in there.
Yeah, wow. Mm. Yeah, steep learning curve right at the start there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me about a typical tipper then. When I came in last, I think you'd just taken delivery of a couple of new XTs with ABBA bodies. In fact, I remember putting one on the cover. So, what are you buying these days?
These days, we had a bit of a gap in buying lorries, firstly, because we were having a look at our fleet and operations and what we're good at and what we're not so good at and what we're suited to do and what we're not suited to do.
Yeah.
So like I said, we first started concentrating on grabs. Now we're concentrating on tippers and volumetrics. We have 4 full-size grabs and we have a baby grab, but it's really about the tippers and the volumetrics what we're focusing on at the moment.
Okay.
Because those are the roads that we're looking to push down. And we've had a lot of uncertainty with the projects which we've been looking to price work on, like the infrastructure projects. We were looking at lorries, the Trident chassis, and we didn't know if we should stick with construction chassis. We've got all this talk about electric lorries.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
We didn't know what to do. So we held off for a very long time on buying, and we went for a very long period where you couldn't get lorries anyway. No. I was being told I'd wait 18 months for a lorry. So we began to, we bought a couple of secondhand Volvo FMX tippers. And at the moment, we have another five Volvo FMX tippers, but we're buying them from a company up north who we have sort of like a partnership with. So we're in partnership with them in another field, and they ordered a load of tippers. They over-ordered because they were worried they wouldn't get enough, and they have five which we're going to buy from them. So we're gonna bring our tipper fleet up to 20.
Okay. Would they have Abbott bodies, or are they Thompson?
They are Thompson.
Thompson, yeah.
They are Thompson bodies. So they're FMX 420s, I believe. FMX 420s, full spec with Thompson bodies on them. They're not... Ordinarily, I like to customize everything. You know, I like to brand everything, and I have exactly how I want the Asheville lorries to look. I won't say it's got lost over the last few years, but I used to baby the lorries, and I'd be all over them and trying to, you know... like trying to clean them off. But when the lorries are going out every day and they're just flying past your window, sometimes I think to myself, these lorries have got to go out and make money. You know, they got to go out and make money first and foremost. And then as long as they're clean and as long as they're working and they're roadworthy, I've kind of put the love and the dressing them up, I've kind of staggered it back. It's different when you're driving yourself, but when they're going out every day and you don't see them, and they need to earn revenue in order to pay for themselves, you kind of, the priority list kind of changes.
Okay, you were saying you're taking these Volvos from a company up north.
Yes.
That's the Fox Group, is it?
Yes, my good friend Paul Fox. We've entered into a partnership with them, and we've started something new. We've gone into plant hire.
Okay.
Yeah, so we are much like the existing customer base, used us for concrete because they all use it. Our existing customer base all hire plant as well.
Yeah.
So for me, plant hire was the final part of the jigsaw. And it's something we had been looking at doing for a while. Fox are very big in the north of the country.
Yeah.
But they were looking to get a foothold down here in London. We want to start plant hire. I get on very well with Paul. He's a man after my own heart. He's 200 miles an hour. The entire time.
In his helicopter.
Yeah, in his helicopter. I don't quite have a helicopter, but I could jump in his, which is, and it's black as well, which fits with, you know, it fits with my colours. So we've gone into partnership with them, and we have Plant, which is mixed livery between Asheville and the Fox Brothers.
Fantastic. Okay, so when did that start?
That started, we were talking for a couple of months, and it officially started about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Okay, brilliant.
It's very new.
Great. Yeah, we've done a podcast with Paul Fox, actually.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, it was about his electric Volvo tippers.
Yes.
So, leads me on neatly to the question, will you be considering getting electric tippers? Or, I saw the video you did with, I think you went out to Germany, didn't you, with
yes.
Mercedes?
Yes.
And you were impressed with that eActros.
I was very impressed with it. It's a bit disorientating how quiet it is. Mm. But I was very impressed with it. The trouble for us with electric trucks is a business of our size, it's a bit different for Paul, he has the resources, but a business of our size, we would be buying these lorries, obviously to reduce our carbon footprint, but it makes it very difficult for us to be competitive and do any work, because let's just say a normal tipper is 160, an electric truck is 360.
Yeah.
And everybody wants to pay £1 less a ton for the material, plus there's about £100,000 worth of infrastructure which needs to go into place in the yard. So where do we find that additional money, and how do we make it back? You know, our fleet is going to go up to, by the time those tippers arrive, our fleet will be at about 36, 37. So we don't have 400 lorries, whereas one electric one can just fit into the mix and the others kind of help it through. So in order for us to push on with electric, which is something we want to do, the infrastructure projects which we're pricing and working on, we would need some support, and they would need support from the government. There would need to be an incentive to help us move it all forward, because we, an operator like ourselves, we simply couldn't afford to spend money on an electric truck.
That makes perfect sense. So what's the environment like at the moment, that from a business point of view? We all seem to be talking ourselves into recession, and construction's a great barometer, isn't it? So how's things working?
We are relatively busy. There is work out there, but we find that we're working a lot harder for the same revenue that we had previously.
Yeah.
So I'll give you an example. Before here, the majority of the work was my relationships, people who found us online, and Terry, who works here, his relationships, just relationships that we've built over the years. We've now split the portfolio in half, and we have one salesman working on concrete, and we have one salesman working on aggregates and waste. So we've brought salesmen in to push those lines, like dedicated salesmen. They only work on those lines. So we're trying to increase our revenue, but we're working extremely hard for the same amount that we had before. But it's, the money is coming in, and there is a lot in the pipeline. But there's a lot of people at the moment who are saying, give it a couple of months, the project's been put off, I'll come back to you. So we haven't lost the work,
yeah.
It just hasn't started, because I feel like there's a bit of uncertainty.
I see. Yeah, that's generally what I'm hearing all over the place, to be honest. It's
The work's not gone anywhere. It just hasn't started yet.
Yeah.
And what normally happens is they all start at the same time, and then we struggle.
Yeah.
That's what normally happens.
And you're doing a fair bit of HS2, aren't you?
We run material in, yeah. We bring in material on the train, and we run material in. But even there, it's slowed down. Without going into too much detail, we're looking at work at HS2, not local, but slightly afar on either side at different ends. And at one end, they're trying to really squeeze on costs. And I mean, they're draining that flannel. They're squeezing every drop out of all of us who are working there without giving a lot of commitment. And at the other end, they're saying that everything's on hold. So it's, thankfully for us, we didn't base our entire order book on HS2 because times would be a bit sticky now if we did. Sure. So we've diversified, and we have people at different size projects. We have everything from a builder doing a loft to someone doing an extension to a ground worker shifting 100 loads a day. So we have an extensive array of clients, which helps us through at times like this.
Okay, brilliant. That's about the end of the interview, really. One last thing. Where do you see the company in maybe 10 years' time?
Well, I'd actually like to set up a... I need to be careful the way I answer these questions, because people will think I'm nuts. In 10 years' time, where do I see Asheville? In 10 years' time, I would like to see Asheville with hubs all over the UK, with a setup of a wash plant next to a batch plant, recycling 95% of what comes back to the yard. I'd like hubs of those all up and down the country. And I would like rail terminals, which are all fed from an Asheville quarry or somewhere else. And I would like a locomotive that says Asheville on it with Asheville wagons. So we are completely in charge of our own destiny. And I've been looking at ships now as well. There's these massive ships which hold 90,000 tons of material. I'm looking at that as well, but you asked for 10 years. My CFO just raised his eyebrow at me, so let me just calm down.
Daniel, absolute pleasure talking to you, as always.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Don't forget to invite me back again. Don't leave it so long next time.
No, I won't.